This program is brought to you by the Genesis Communications Network, a world leader in talk radio since 1998. Visit GCNlive.com today.
You can stick it to the man and big tech. Join our FTL social mastodon at social.freetalklive.com.
Free Talk Live. We're kicking off the second hour of the show. Phones are open and you can bring up anything you want. Maybe you want to weigh in on what's going on at the World Economic Forum. Their meeting has been going on throughout this week. I think it continues through tomorrow. And they are plotting who knows what. They're plotting some things openly and probably many things not so openly. If you want to weigh in on that, you can bring up absolutely anything you want here as well. The number is 603-283-6160. That's 603-283-6160. I have a story that I mentioned to you last week, Matt. By the way, it's Ian and Matt here tonight, that I wanted to share. Because you're definitely somebody who pays attention to the news when it comes to the world of guns and gun freedom here in the United States. And this one is coming from TheFederalist.com. Court to ATF gun grabbers, bump stocks aren't machine guns, and you don't make the rules. Apparently, that's the summary here. It's the Cargill decision. The Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, Firearms, and Explosives, the ATF, lacks the authority to declare non-mechanical bump stocks as so-called machine guns, according to the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals. This, I guess, within the last couple of weeks.
Yep.
The decision, Cargill versus Garland, is the latest example of the court's foiling attempts by the federal bureaucracy to exercise the legislative power that the Constitution vests with Congress. But until the Supreme Court's separation of powers jurisprudence catches up with a runaway administrative state, the Cargill victory holds limited import. On October 1st, 2017, a gunman murdered more than 50 innocent people in Las Vegas, injuring another 500. The murderer used several weapons, many of which had bump stocks attached. A bump stock, as the court in Cargill explained, quote, is a firearm attachment that allows a shooter to harness the natural recoil of a semi-automatic weapon to quickly re-engage the trigger after firing, enabling him to shoot at an increased rate of speed, meaning faster than you would presumably be able to pull the trigger on your own volition. It increases the rate beyond that. And as somebody who's not even near as much of a fanatic as you, Matt, but I've had my time spending, so I've been at the range here and there, and you don't even need a bump stock to achieve this. You can simply do it if you've got a rifle, for instance. Mm-hmm. You can simply pull the rifle forward as you hold your finger and the trigger in one place, and it will provide the exact same effect, won't it?
Yeah, another way to, that's tricky to do that, but it's possible. Yeah. And the best way I know to do it, other than a bump stock, is just stick your thumb through your belt loop and hook it through the, hook your finger through the trigger and pull forward on the gun, and it'll have the same
effect. Just keep firing until you stop pulling forward.
Yeah, it's just it's literally bumping your finger off the trigger. It's called, that's why the bump stock kind of does it for you. But the whole Las Vegas shooting thing was, I'm going to be the conspiracy theorist on that one.
There's a lot of questions.
That was real shaky, what we're told that guy did. And, there was a bump stock there. Oh, really? Was there a bump stock? That's funny, because I heard an M249 shooting.
Yeah, and a lot faster than a bump stock would fire, right?
It wasn't the speed of the firing. It was more the meter of not how fast it was going, but the rhythm at which it was going was familiar, And it almost sounded like there was two of them. But, and that would make a lot more sense. And how do they, those windows on those buildings are like 2 inches thick and they weigh thousands of pounds. And it's just not something that's, there's a lot of really shady stuff about that. I don't think it happened the way we're told it happened at all. And how we got, past security with all that stuff. It's Las Vegas. They have more security, more cameras in Las Vegas per square mile than, the Pentagon.
Yeah.
none of that makes any sense to me. But, as far as the court findings going recently, the latest one is they're going after, what do you call them? Arm braces.
Oh.
The arm brace is the latest one. So the ATF...
Is this the thing that turns a pistol into something that's not looks a little larger than a pistol or whatever? Turns it into a quote-unquote machine gun or whatever?
Turns it into a short barrel rifle, they're saying now. Before, it was just a pistol, an AR pistol.
Yeah.
With a brace on it to put on your arm so you could shoot it with one hand, like you would shoot a pistol.
Mm-hmm.
It was really designed for returning Iraq war veterans who had lost limbs and still wanted to shoot their AR pistols. They just couldn't hold it up with the other hand, so they put a device on the end where the stock would normally go, where you're not allowed to have a stock on an AR pistol because then it would turn into a short barrel rifle. The ATF has allowed these things to be sold for 10 years or more, and there's millions of them out there. And now they're suddenly saying, nope, sorry, those are all short-barrel rifles. We were wrong, so turn them all in. Or
what does that mean? Is a short-barreled rifle prohibited or something?
Yes, short-barreled rifle is a class 3 weapon.
Okay.
So you need to have a special background check, and you got to leave it at the gun shop for a year before they finally get back to you. You got to have passport photos taken and... Special, pay a special fee for a tax stamp in order to have it.
Is that because a short-barreled rifle is more concealable and that's bad?
There's literally no solid...
There's no reason.
No solid reason why a short-barreled rifle should be a controlled item in the first place. And that goes for machine guns, too. There's no reason a machine gun should be a controlled item. We're used to that being a reality. But it wasn't always a reality in the United States. And in fact, it was Bonnie and Clyde paired with all the mafia stuff that was going on in the 20s and 30s, basically swarming around Prohibition that was causing some organized crime and things like that to happen, where the ATF had to come into being in the first place to control these dangerous things. So, they're really, I remember driving through Endicott, New York in the 90s and hearing Tommy guns being fired full auto. It's just kids in the backyard with an old Tommy gun. And the thing is, Tommy guns were made at IBM back then. So there's still a number of Tommy guns floating around backyards in Endicott, New York that are absolutely illegal. And they will go to prison for having them.
They used to just sell them in a Sears catalog?
Yeah, you could order stuff. You could order a Maxim. You could order a Maxim, a squad-served full-on machine gun. That's something you have to put on a tripod in order to operate through a Sears catalog.
Yeah. Wow, the good old days.
Yeah, the good old days. Hopefully we'll get back to those good old days. And the sentiment inside...
Maybe in New Hampshire, but in an independent New Hampshire, you might have a chance of that.
You might. And the way things are going, here's the thing. The Supreme Court is getting really fed up with the lack of compliance from the ATF and them beating around the bushes. And it looks like even some of the lefties on the Supreme Court are getting a little... haggard about being sloughed off by the ATF. The mood is strange, and it's a right-leaning Supreme Court as it is, but even the lefties are starting to say, their attitudes seem to be, why are we being ignored? And the reality is the Supreme Court can only issue an opinion, and that opinion doesn't have to be followed. Once they issue that opinion, it sets you up really well if you get caught with something like that to file a lawsuit against the ATF. But the Supreme Court can't just take down the ATF. They can't make the ATF cease to exist.
Too bad.
Too bad.
Nice.
Yep.
So here's more of the story, this Cargill case. So less than 2 weeks after the Vegas massacre, two bills prohibiting bump stocks were proposed in Congress. But before Congress could act on the legislation, the ATF published notice of proposed rulemaking, stating the ATF intended to, quote, reverse its previous interpretation that non-mechanical bump stocks are not machine guns for purposes of the National Firearms Act and Gun Control Act. So they had an opinion. And then they changed their opinion, is what they said. National Firearms Act and Gun Control Act make it a crime to transfer or possess a machine gun and define a machine gun to mean, quote, any weapon which shoots, is designed to shoot, or can be readily restored to shoot automatically more than one shot without manual reloading by a single function of the trigger, unquote. The definition also includes any part intended for use, quote, in converting a weapon into a machine gun. unquote, which is why we've talked previously when you've been here, Matt, about these little pieces of metal that were being sold.
Lightning links.
Lightning links, which are like the size of apparently like, I don't know, a can of soda, the tab or something like
yeah,
that on
think,
there.
Think of like the average, you know, die that would come with a game of Monopoly.
Mm-hmm.
You know, some of them are really small, you know, maybe a couple of die in size.
And you put this thing into a gun of some you know, semi-automatic sort, and it can convert it, ostensibly, into an automatic
basically
weapon. And so they were calling, and still are, as I understand it, calling these little pieces of metal, quote-unquote, machine guns, right?
Yes. Okay. A lightning link legally is a machine gun itself.
That's how insane
it's loony
these people are.
Well, don't forget about the guy that the guy with the YouTube channel I showed you there. He was selling...
He was making artwork.
Yeah, he was selling little credit card-sized sheets of metal with you know, drawings on them mm-hmm. of where you might
cut
into the metal.
Yeah.
And when you made those cuts, you would have a lightning link.
If you wanted to commit a felony.
If you want to commit
right?
a felony, but in the meantime, these are, you know, $12.95, order as many as you like.
But they said, okay, well, this isn't a lightning link, but it could be a lightning link,
so
therefore they prosecuted him.
Yeah, they prosecuted him, and I mean, he's still making YouTube videos on a fairly regular basis.
Has he gone to court yet, or is it still pending?
I'm not sure where that stands, but he's on the warpath still. Mm-hmm. He's making... He's preaching hard these
days. That's a free speech issue right there.
Yeah, CRS Firearms is that guy's channel,
okay.
I think.
Yeah, I'd be curious to know what the latest is on that yes. case. That's an outrageous free speech
that's
violation.
Absurd.
That's absurd. This guy's making artwork, mm-hmm. and they're saying, that's illegal? Well, it wouldn't surprise me, because you know, my case was a free speech case, but
yep.
that didn't matter to the jury.
Nope.
Bump stocks were first invented in the early 2000s, soon after the ATF concluded that mechanical bump stocks qualify as machine guns under the National Firearms Act, but that non-mechanical bump stocks, which require the shooter to apply constant forward pressure with the non-shooting hand, this is what we were talking about earlier, where you can just pull the gun forward, essentially, and just keep your fingers steady, and then it'll just keep firing, to apply constant forward pressure with the non-shooting hand and constant rearward pressure with the shooting hand, we're not illegal machine guns. This was in the early 2000s. They made that determination. But following the Vegas shooting, the ATF purported to modify the definition of machine gun and stated that the statutory term machine gun includes bump stock type devices. After the ATF published its final rule redefining machine guns in 2018, Michael Cargill, who had lawfully acquired two non-mechanical bump stocks, surrendered them to the ATF and then filed suit against the ATF. In his lawsuit, Cargill argued the ATF lacked authority to, quote, promulgate the final rule because its interpretation of machine gun conflicts with the unambiguous statutory definition. Among other arguments, Cargill also asserted that by defining a non-mechanical bump stock as a machine gun, the ATF unconstitutionally exercised Congress's legislative power. So basically, the ATF didn't wait for Congress to make a decision about this. They just said, well, we'll just do this on our own.
Yep.
And they did that.
Mm-hmm. There's another very interesting case coming up that I heard about earlier this week, and I'm going to be keeping an eye on this one. Get this. Some young kid, early 20s, decided that he wanted to build his AR-15 into an M16. He wanted to make it fully automatic. It's illegal.
Okay.
But that didn't stop him from applying for the stamp to the ATF
okay. So
that they would deny him.
Mm-hmm.
Now he's got a case that he's bringing against the ATF for prohibiting him from having his full battery of gun rights because he wants to. Now this brings into the question, what level of control does the ATF really have over stuff like that in light of the recent decisions against, you know, not being allowed to have parts
mm-hmm.
and not being, you know, you're not allowed to have certain parts and stuff like that.
Right.
So, this should be a pretty interesting. I love that this kid, like, he did it on purpose. Mm-hmm. He knew what the answer was going to be, but he applied for the stamp, and knowing it was going to get denied, so that he could take them to court.
Does he have a lawyer? Or is he doing it himself?
Nope. Okay. It's going to be a lawyered up thing.
Hmm. So he's playing this out pretty good, though.
Yes.
The federal court rejected Cargill's claims following a one-day trial. On appeal, the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals held the ATF properly classified the non-mechanical bump stocks as machine guns. Cargill then sought review by the full Court of Appeals, and on Friday, the majority of the 16 members in the en banc Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals reversed
holding the federal statutory definition of machine guns, quote, unambiguously fails to cover non-mechanical bump stocks, unquote, and that to criminalize such bump stocks, Congress must act legislatively, which I presume they have not done.
Nope.
In striking the ATF's rule, and by the way, this Cargill guy looks familiar. I think he had a shop in Austin at one time. Mm-hmm. I believe I've seen him at like the Texas Bitcoin conference.
Oh, yeah?
I think this guy had one of the first Bitcoin vending machines in Texas at his gun
store.
Shut
up. You know this guy?
He looks very familiar.
I haven't seen his face, and I wouldn't know him anyway, but that's funny that you do. Yeah. That's great.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it says he's from Central Texas.
Because this is a big name. That case is a big deal.
Yeah.
It's been, in the gun world, that name Cargill's a big deal.
He's a big black dude, and he's fairly recognizable.
No kidding.
So, yeah,
no kidding.
For sure.
You know, our good friend Lauren and his company Polymer 80 joined the big suit against... making your own, you know, what the ATF says, you're not allowed to make your own, they're not allowed to sell kits anymore, so Polymer 80 has joined that case.
Good.
In the last week or two, so that's another one to watch. There's so much, Ian, going on in the gun world right now. It is, everybody in the gun world is fully aware at this point that they are literally trying to disarm. It's not a conspiracy theory.
Mm-hmm.
The ATF is an awful organization full of awful people. Most people are realizing that the FBI is right there with them, also awful. The FBI has less trust in the gun world than it ever has before.
Mm.
And I think that's pretty much spreading. People who were once, you know, wary about government are now full on asking, why do we need them again?
Man, I wish that was the case in my trial, yeah. But apparently none of those people made it on the jury. In striking the ATF's rule that non-mechanical bump stocks qualified as machine guns, the Fifth Circuit focused on the statutory language Congress used in the National Firearms Act and Gun Control Act to define machine gun and the mode of operation of a non-mechanical bump stock. Specifically, the court stressed that to qualify as a machine gun under the statute, the weapon must shoot automatically more than one shot by a single function of the trigger. But because a semi-automatic rifle equipped with a non-mechanical bump stock only fires one shot each time the trigger functions, the Fifth Circuit concluded it did not qualify under the statute as a machine gun. That's a great point, right? Like, I mean, it's a pretty clear distinction. Machine gun means you hold the trigger down and it keeps firing. A semi-automatic weapon will not do that. You can tape that trigger down on a semi-automatic weapon and it's just going to fire once.
Yep.
Right? The bump stock is... It does not turn it into a machine gun. It just simply increases the potential rate of fire beyond what you could pull with your own trigger.
Correct. Nor is the bump stock itself a machine gun.
Indeed. Because their redefinition, they beating the ATF, their redefinition of machine gun conflicted with Congress's statutory definition of the term, the Fifth Circuit's en banc decision held that it need not decide whether the ATF's rule was, quote, an exercise of legislative power in violation of the Constitution's vesting of all such power in Congress, unquote, that the federal appellate court in Cargill sidestepped the separation of powers question, renders the decision of limited value, and does little to limit the constitutionally ungirded authority of the administrative state. So this is something you'll see courts do on fairly often, is they'll have an appeal in front of them, and there'll be like 10 different options from them to choose from as far as why they could overturn the lower court's decision. And they'll pick the most narrow possible legal option. They will pick the least important one,
mm-hmm.
and they'll overturn it based on that. And completely ignore, like, the big ones.
The big elephant in the room.
Right, the ones that could completely overturn the ATF or overturn...
Yeah, you know, and whatever. I've wondered before, like, I wonder how many federal judges are actually under, like, threat, like some kind of veiled or open threat from some government thug-type hitmen. You know, all you got to do, you have one person that gets assassinated, and all you got to do is show one judge a picture of your latest, you know, a recent project you did on a guy and say, now you're gonna mind your manners in your courtroom, aren't you, judge? And the guy says, yep, sure thing, absolutely. I'm your man.
Well, yeah. I mean, the FBI, of course, is known for doing information gathering.
Mm-hmm.
They get a lot of publicity for the criminal people that they go after, but there's a huge portion of the FBI, and this is according to an interview with one of their former agents that Mark Edge, our co-host, did. There's a huge chunk of the FBI that's dedicated to information gathering. It's their job to infiltrate political movements and their job to, you know, learn about people like Martin Luther King or Aretha Franklin or all these people that they've been gathering dossiers on for years or whatever. They do that within our movement. They do that within the conservatives, the liberals, you know, the Antifa, Proud Boys. There's all kinds of infiltration going on. And these are agents whose job it isn't to necessarily set you up for something, although those people exist as well. Mm-hmm. It's their job to just sit there and listen.
Yep.
And take notes.
They're actual Stasi.
Mm-hmm.
They're literally Stasi.
Nonetheless, the Cargill decision provides a small check on the ATF and its attempt to legislate by regulation and tease up this narrow issue for the Supreme Court, as three other federal circuit courts of appeal had previously upheld the ATF bump stock rule. But it could be some time before the High Court delves into this issue because the Fifth Circuit left the question of an appropriate remedy to the lower court. Accordingly, until the lower court enters an injunction or otherwise declares the ATF's bump stock rule invalid, review by the Supreme Court is unlikely, because then it would have to be the lower court that would rule it invalid, and then the ATF would appeal that up, presumably, to the Supreme Court. Even then, the issue may never make it to the Supreme Court if Congress acts to criminalize the possession or use of bump stocks. While that would be a defeat to Cargill and others who seek to possess bump stocks, absent a ruling that the Second Amendment guarantees a right to bump stock devices, something unlikely, it would be a victory for the constitutional separation of powers that granted Congress, not unelected bureaucrats, the power to pass laws. And, of course, there's also that EPA decision that came out recently that's sort of in the same vein, the idea being that these bureaucracies cannot exceed their statutorily granted or congressionally granted so-called authority, but yet they do it all the time. And you know, it's hard to be optimistic. I see you as being very optimistic on this front, Matt, and I appreciate the optimism, but it is hard to be optimistic given that, as you pointed out, when a Supreme Court rules on a thing, it doesn't necessarily change anything.
Right.
It just means that you now have the opportunity to go through the process with a Supreme Court ruling in your back pocket.
Right.
And that's going to cost, you know, a ton of money.
A lot.
And take a lot of time. And good luck, you know, and then you're fighting it out in the courts for another decade.
It sucks. Yes, on one hand, you're right, but on the other hand, there actually is a lot of money available. Like Gun Owners of America, people like me throw money at this stuff. I mean, you don't have to be rich. People are just throwing money at these types of defensive organizations. You know, Gun Owners of America is fantastic, and they are working overtime at this point.
Well, speaking of the courts, there's a couple of other interesting cases going on out there. One of them from the folks down at Texit, the independence movement in Texas. They're suing Facebook, and they think they may be able to overturn the old Texas versus White decision from the 1800s that the government relies on whenever they say, oh, no states can secede from the United States. It's a Civil War case. We're coming up.
Silver has always been nature's very own antibiotic, and only one system allows you to generate an endless supply of natural silver solutions. SilverLungs.com. You'll find no wild claims or pseudoscience, just a lifetime of nano-sized pure silver solutions. The Silver Lungs generator allows you to make your own, so stop paying for silver solutions. The unique lung delivery system targets respiratory infections where other silver solutions simply cannot reach. See the Silver Lungs generator and lung delivery system at SilverLungs.com. That's SilverLungs.com.
Are you curious about what might be missing from your diet and supplement choices? Take a free health assessment to identify your possible nutrient deficiencies. As a certified holistic health coach, I will help you assess and prioritize a supplement program based on Dr. Wallach's recommendations. Call Linda at 833-VITAL-90. That number to call is 833-848-2590. That's 833-VITAL-90.
USA News Update. Singer-songwriter David Crosby has died at the age of 81. Crosby was a founding member of influential 60s rock bands The Byrds and Crosby, as well as Stills and Nash, which later became Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young. His wife said in a statement to Variety that he died surrounded by family after battling a long illness.
Actor Alec Baldwin could have a tough legal road ahead following the decision from a New Mexico district attorney to charge the actor with two counts of involuntary manslaughter. Attorney and host of The Weeknd, Michael Brown, says Baldwin's previous statements could hurt him in court.
Everything that he said, including the denials of shooting the gun, when in fact we know that he shot the gun, that's going to be used in the case before the jury.
Lisa Marie Presley's death is now listed as undetermined. Dave Collins, USA News.
Get healthy, not high, with 100% pure CBD powerful natural pain relief from Veterans Vitality. GCN listeners, have you ever thought about how CBD may help you? I'm sure you have heard about the many benefits of CBD. Well, here's your opportunity to try before you buy. Created by veterans and for everyone who deserves better choices, our CBD is derived from organic hemp, grown in the USA, and third-party tested. Veterans Vitality CBD saves you as much as 25 to 50% over our competition, and a portion of all sales is contributed to veteran nonprofits and events. Many of our customers have experienced improved quality of life, help with anxiety, PTSD, and overall well-being. Our products do not contain THC. They are safe, non-addictive, effective, and 100% legal. GCN listeners, get your free trial bottle of premium CBD by simply paying shipping and handling at GCNFreeCBD.com. That's GCNFreeCBD.com. Again, GCNFreeCBD.com. Offered by Veterans Vitality Premium CBD.
Extendivite really works. Here's just a few testimonials from Amazon. RL. 5 stars. Been taking this for 2 months now. I feel better. Have more energy. April. My husband started taking Extendivite, and he said he feels much better and has more energy. EW. Need to try. Everyone needs this for their health. Great product. Great people. Josie. It works great. This product has made my blood pressure and cholesterol stable. I highly recommend it. JC. Great product. Has worked well these last few years. To get your Extendivite today, go to Extendivite.com. That's Extendivite.com. Or call us at 1-877-928-8822.
Extend your life with Extendivite.
Appreciate what we do? Help us advertise, market, and promote for just $5 a month at amp.freetalklive.com.
It is Free Talk Live. The phones are open, and you can join us here if you want. The number is 603-283-6160. That's 603-283-6160. You want to weigh in on the World Economic Forum that is ongoing. If you are curious about what's been going on over there, I got to point you to the folks over at Rebel News. They've been doing some really interesting man-on-the-street stuff because, well, they're not allowed into the actual event.
Of course not.
Because they're independent media, but you can check out WEFReports.com to see the reports they're filing from the streets there in Davos. We also talked about the bump stock situation and a recent court decision, Cargill, that has put a little chink in the armor, apparently, of the ATF on this issue. It hasn't completely overturned their administrative so-called powers, but at the very least it has pushed back somewhat on what they've done by trying to make bump stocks illegal without any kind of act of Congress. So you can comment on those things as well here as with you tonight. It is Ian
and Matt.
So since we're talking about court cases, there's another one that is brewing right now, according to, let's see, is this the New York Times? Yeah, New York Times. The Supreme Court is looking at reconsidering key tenets of online speech. And this could be very, very bad. For years, giant social networks like Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram have operated under two crucial tenets. The first is that platforms have the power to decide what content to keep online and what to take down, free from government oversight.
The second is that websites cannot be held legally responsible for most of what their users post online, shielding companies from lawsuits over libelous speech, extremist content, and real-world harm linked to their platforms. And this is something we've discussed before. We're going to get into what it actually is. It's a certain section of an old law from 1996, Section 230, which protects platforms from liability for the actions of their users. And this is good law, right? Like, this is something that should exist. It shouldn't need to be in the law. It should just be, like, just the facts. I mean, it should just be, like, whoever says a thing is the one who's responsible for it, not the person publishing the thing, or not the person who's allowing that person to say the thing. But this is what is being considered now by the Supreme Court, or potentially reconsidered, leading what could be to the most significant reset of the doctrines governing online speech since U.S. officials and courts decided to apply few regulations to the web in the 1990s. On Friday, Supreme Court is expected to discuss, and this was posted today, so this is happening tomorrow, whether to hear two cases that challenge laws in Texas and Florida barring online platforms from taking down certain political content. Next month, the court is scheduled to hear a case that questions Section 230, the 1996 statute that provides or that protects the platforms from liability for the content posted by their users. The cases could eventually alter the hands-off legal position that the United States has largely taken toward online speech, potentially upending the businesses of TikTok, Twitter, Snap, and Meta, which owns Facebook and Instagram. It's a moment when everything might change, said Daphne Keller, former lawyer for Google, who directs a program at Stanford in their cyber policy center. These cases are part of a growing global battle over how to handle harmful speech online. In recent years, as Facebook and other sites attracted billions of users and became influential communications conduits, the power they wielded came under increasing scrutiny. Questions arose over how the social networks might have unduly affected elections, genocides, wars, and political debates. Of course, now we're seeing with the Twitter files that have been coming out, all of the proof that anybody ever needed to see that indeed Twitter was working hand in hand with the government to restrict people's ability to express themselves, for instance, on the question of COVID or not taking the vaccine, for instance. There have been so many different examples of this, and it should be their right to do that since it is their platform. But really what's going to happen here, if the Supreme Court overturns Section 230, you can say goodbye to the idea of platforms like Twitter. Because what would happen if they get rid of Section 230, and you know, maybe this is much ado about nothing, maybe the Supreme Court won't even hear the case, they might just reject it, and then that'll be the end of it, I presume. But if they overturn this section, that's going to mean that any website that has the ability for users to post content, which for the last 15-plus years has been the bulk of the most popular sites on the Internet, right? Like, before Facebook, before Twitter, you had forums, you had Yahoo groups, you had these old versions of platforms where people could post messages, and there was very little moderation. Each, you know, area would have its own moderator in that if you started your own Yahoo group or you started the forum, then you're the one who's responsible for moderating it. But if your forum grew to the extent that you couldn't possibly know what was all on that forum, and then somebody goes and they post something that's illegal, for instance, or a threat or something like that on your forum, and you don't know that it's there, Section 230 protects you because you didn't post it. You just have this website. People use the website. You don't know what they're using the website for.
Right.
If you knew what the website was being used for, then you could arguably have been asked to take down certain things, but maybe it was your policy to let people have freedom of speech. Maybe you thought if somebody makes a post, then they're the ones responsible for the things that they said, and that's the way it ought to be. And that is the way that it ought to be. An individual posting their opinion online, even if it is a threat or some sort of, you know, possibly illegal thing that they're saying or whatever, they should be the ones held responsible for that.
For sure.
Overturning Section 230 would reverse that and would mean that someone could file a lawsuit against the actual platform itself for the content that they are hosting.
Sounds like a case for decentralized platforms.
It would be that case, and maybe that would ultimately really kind of thrust whatever versions of decentralized platforms that there are out there, and there aren't that many.
I'd want to know what would happen to things like 4chan.
Well, that's another good question. 4chan would probably be targeted because governments hate 4chan.
Absolutely.
It's a place where anonymous posting happens, basically. Yep. And you get what you get when you get anonymous posting, which is you get some ugly stuff, but you also get some really interesting content posted by people who you have no idea who they are. And so, yeah, they would definitely be targeting 4chan, although I suspect that 4chan hopefully is smart enough to not host their servers in the United States. Like, that they might see the writing on the wall and are hosting their servers in some place that does not have these sorts of rules or the potential to have these sorts of rules. But, yeah, we may see more decentralized platforms coming to rise because 4chan is a centralized platform. That's running on
right.
Somebody somewhere is paying the hosting bill at some server farm for that website, and that person can be targeted if they can be sussed out, if they can be found. Of course, in a lot of cases, the U.S. federal government can just call up ICANN, which is the Internet Phone Book Company, basically, and just pull websites from people. So if it's, I think it's 4chan.org, if I recall correctly, so they just go to whoever hosts the .org domain name service, and they say, we'll take that now, and they just hand it over to them. That's why whenever you see these website takedowns, you see all the logos from the federal agencies.
The federal seal.
Yeah, because they actually take over the domain name. So we may end up having to see other alternatives, and there really aren't that many right now, but certainly ending Section 230 protections for sites would likely speed the development of those alternatives. But imagine, like, we've seen how the sort of centralization of these video hosting sites, for instance, YouTube, where we're not streaming tonight because they didn't like, quote-unquote, medical misinformation on the show recently, whatever that, probably talking about COVID or something. They never actually tell you what exactly it was that you said. They just give you the three-hour-long show, and they say, your violation's in there somewhere. And so we're going to be back on YouTube, but, you know, we may not last for another 3 weeks before we get another strike or whatever. So we already know that there's huge problems with these platforms, and we know that something that YouTube has done over the last roughly decade is they've changed their algorithm to only recommend the sort of mainstream stuff, right? So if you search for a thing on YouTube, you'll get a CNN story or a MSNBC or a Fox News or, you know, one of these major broadcaster-type channels. That's going to be what comes up first. Now, maybe if you scroll down or go to the next three pages of results, maybe you'll see some independent results there. They're not completely ghosting all of those channels, but they're weighting the channels, right? They're saying, we at YouTube believe that these are the channels that are relevant. We at YouTube think these are what you should watch. And so they're pushing that on people pretty heavily.
I don't know why people still use YouTube and
habits.
Facebook. It's so, you know what? I've noticed in the last few months, at least the last couple months, Facebook seems to be getting really bad.
Really bad to me years ago.
You know, I mean, it's like unusable bad. It's like
broken?
Every other post is a sponsored ad from somebody, and it's just like, why are we here? And if I have 5,000 people,
frustrating.
You know, my friends list has been basically maxed out for many years, and I see posts from like the same two or three people, and that's it. And I don't know why, and they're not people that I have anything to do with. There's a lot of flat earthers.
Oh, God.
I mean, a lot. And it's like, what do I have in common with these? Aren't people that I know in real life? There's one really annoying vegan libertarian dude in Southern California that I cannot stand. They made sure they showed me every single thing he ever posts for many months on it.
Are you following him, or is he your friend or something?
No, we're friends on Facebook. I mean, that's it. Like, we added each other during probably Ron Paul 2011, 12, something, you know, who knows. But I can't understand why I'm seeing. I blocked him or whatever.
Okay.
I got rid of that guy. Can't hack it. But I can't understand, like, why aren't they showing me my friends' posts, like the people that I regularly communicate with and talk to and comment on their stuff? I don't see their posts.
So weird.
It is absolutely strange. Their algorithm is busted.
Yeah. It's trash.
It is absolutely garbage, and I cannot see this going on much longer. It's not a useful tool.
Well, okay, so you ask the question of why do people still use it? Why do people still use it? I mean, you're still using it, right? Even though, as you say, it is not useful.
Yeah, it's not.
Why? Why are you there?
Because my mom is on there.
Okay. Well, don't you have her phone number?
Yeah, I do.
Okay, that's a bad excuse.
It really is, really is. But, I mean, I don't know. She can see what I'm up to when I post on.
Are there still some groups that are active that are useful to you or fun?
Not especially.
No, there's no more good meme groups. I know you used to be in some of the meme groups.
Yeah, I mean, I can get memes other places. Yeah. I'm kind of a meme lord.
So. Right. What do they do that you can't do somewhere else?
Nothing.
Yeah.
Nothing.
It's like old habits. That's what it is.
Well, the draw is there's so many people there.
Like, that's what people always say.
Yeah, but if they're not seeing my posts and I'm not seeing theirs,
right.
What good is having 5,000 people on my friends list?
That's what I was saying years ago when I finally quit Facebook, and I think it was the very beginning of 2018, so it's been like 5 years now.
Yeah, good for you. I remember when you did it. It was a fantastic idea.
But it took me some time, right? Like, it took me years to kind of wean myself off of Facebook. The first thing I did a few years prior to actually full-on quitting was I uninstalled their apps from my phone.
Mm.
Because they kept on getting bigger, and then they kept adding apps. It used to be just one Facebook app.
Yep.
And then it became Facebook Messenger and Facebook Pages and Facebook. And so then there was three apps. I don't know if there's like six now. I have no idea. But at the point there was like two or three apps, I said, and I looked at the size of these things. It's one of those.
They're giant.
The Facebook app just keeps on growing. It just keeps on like caching everything that you do on your phone. It was like hundreds of megabytes. Like, I don't have room for this.
Yep.
So I got rid of it. But I was still using Facebook. I just said, you know, I don't need the app. I'll just go on the browser. And that was a fine way because, you know, you don't need 15 browsers to access the Facebook site. And, of course, they're trying to push their app on you. Like, oh, you need the app. No, I don't. It's just using the browser. And then I finally I got this one browser extension for my laptop, for your full desktop computer or whatever, that would it would sort of edit your little notifications list, and it would remove all the stupid crap from, like, I don't want to see if somebody likes my post. Don't care. That wasn't interesting to me. Like, if somebody's commenting, okay, that's kind of interesting. I'd like to know about that happening. So I kind of edited, sort of curated through this app that, so that way I wasn't seeing as many notifications. I would only see the ones that are the more useful ones. But then what I ended up deciding, and again, I'm talking about over a period of years here, what I ended up doing was I noticed that I just kept on clicking the notifications thing, right? There's that dopamine hit, right?
Right.
You get that dopamine hit by clicking on that, and I knew that was a problem for me. So I created a rule that said, all right, well, now I'm not going to do it until that number is 5, because I would do it on 1. If there was 1 notification,
check it right away.
I'd click that notification. And so then I said, all right, not going to do it until it hits 5. And I stuck to it. And so I click it when I hit 5. And then I upped it to 10. And I upped it to like 15 and 20 and then 25 and then 30. And then what I started to notice was when it was, I don't know, 15, 30, somewhere in that range, I started to notice that whenever I would click it, I would be disappointed. Like, there's nothing in here.
Nope.
This has 30 notifications, and there's nothing in there worth actually reading.
Correct. It's worse now.
And it went to, and then so I said, all right, 50, 75. And I eventually got up to like, you know, 99. But by that point, I was ready to just, all right,
delete it.
It's over. And I'd finally come to the realization that there was really no content there worth actually looking at. And on occasion when, you know, I would actually interact with people, it was almost always in some stupid argument or some dumb, you know, fight or spat, some sort of flame war going on, which I didn't want to spend my time on either.
No, time suck.
I've done enough of that.
What's the worst kind of time suck?
Yeah, in my life. So it really brought absolutely nothing to the table, but it took a long period of sort of weaning myself away from it to finally get to the point where on New Year's Eve I said, all right.
Later.
It's over. And I did what you call a deactivation, because you couldn't delete your account. I don't know if they have allowed deletion of accounts yet, but at the time when I quit, you could not just delete your account. You had to, quote-unquote, deactivate it. So I deactivated it, and I did not come back. So that's my story on that one.
I think mine's just, I'm just going to end up weaning off of it organically. Mm-hmm. I don't think I'm going to try to. It's just getting so boring. It doesn't work. Like, why do I want to go there if it doesn't even function?
It comes back to the habit, right? So one of the things I noticed when I finally quit was if I was doing, you know, whatever it was, I'm working on my laptop, calling radio stations or whatever I was doing during the daytime, in whatever my mind would have considered to be some sort of lull or downtime, you know, maybe I'm on the phone with somebody or I've just checked off something on my list or whatever, I would notice that I would go to the browser URL area and my fingers would start typing FAC. And normally, you know, the thing's going to autofill the rest of it, and then I would hit the return button. And there were a few times where I hit the return button and I'm like, oh, crap. You know, I don't want to be here.
Right.
And I closed the tab.
Oops.
And I ended up catching myself typing FAC multiple times.
It's a compulsion.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. The habit of you've done it so often. It is the thing that you do in that downtime to fill the space between doing something productive or doing something you actually enjoy. That's what you do. So I think that's one of the reasons why people are still there. They have the habit of going there all the time, on the toilet or when they're in the kitchen or when they're going to bed or whatever, right? Whenever they happen to use it. So it is something you just have to use your willpower on, basically, and be aware of yourself.
Well, Facebook's making it easy because it's starting to suck really bad.
Okay, good. It's about time. So to go back to the story here about these sites, it may end up being the government that kills Facebook. If the Supreme Court rules to overturn Section 230 of this 1996 law that essentially protects platforms from liability, because if Facebook is now all of a sudden liable for the things that its users post, they're just going to shut down. They're going to say, okay, well, we made our money. We're going to focus on the metaverse now.
Yep.
And we're just going to close this platform down. We might allow Fox News or MSNBC to continue using this as their own platform because we trust them because we're all corporate buddies. But you average folks, you guys are a liability. We can't just have you posting whatever you want to post and then somebody sues us over it. And the same thing will be true for YouTube. They will just get rid of absolutely anyone who isn't some sort of corporate channel, some big megatech or mega media corporation.
They could change their name at that point, too.
To ThemTube?
Yep. Or something. That's actually a great thing to say there.
UsTube.
It's not YouTube anymore. No. You can't just go on and make your own, you know, make your own channel and put up your own content anymore if that content isn't, you know, approved.
Right. I mean, they've been demonetizing people for years now, and that's been a major complaint.
There's a channel, Mr. Guns and Gear. Mr. Guns and Gear is about as white bread, offensive at all. At all.
Mm-hmm.
He seems like he's probably like a ninth grade math teacher or something. Very boring guy. But he's very into guns, and he talks about the latest, you know, gear that's coming out and the latest guns that are coming out, and he'll review them and stuff, and he talks about the latest law stuff that's going on, and he's very clinical and boring, if you ask me, but they didn't just demonetize him, they banned his whole channel. Like, his channel just disappeared for like 3 days, and he posted a video saying, hey, sorry I was gone. I don't know where I went, guys.
So they brought him back?
Yeah, apparently they re-upped his channel again. But that just goes to show you, if you're not saying the right things, then you're gone. They just shut you off.
Sometimes it seems like they do that. I forget, there was another example of what you're talking about where somebody's channel just got completely axed.
Yeah, just annihilated. And
then,
gone.
And then the person sent in some sort of appeal to YouTube, and then YouTube restored the channel, just like you're describing. And it almost seemed like it was also a sort of a similar channel. I'm not saying it was like boring, but it was a channel that had some sort of a controversial subject, right?
Right.
And this person got their channel restored, but it was like, well, why'd that happen? There was no explanation from YouTube. There was not. Oh, and I remember specifically, there weren't even strikes that were issued, because normally the procedure is you get one strike, two strikes, and then the third strike, you're gone forever, right? The first and second strikes, usually you can kind of string it along. If you wait long enough before you post again, that strike will go away. That's what we've been doing with our channel, is...
That just seems like so much work.
It's not that much work. We just don't stream there until the strike goes away, basically.
How do you keep track of when the strike's going to go
away?
I'll
put it on my calendar.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. I mean, there's still an audience there, right? Like, there's still people... This is the old excuse, right? There's still people on Facebook. Or on YouTube. But in this case, it was the same exact thing. Dude had his channel taken down with no strikes beforehand. It was just gone.
Yep.
And as soon as he sent the email or whatever, hit the, this was a mistake button or whatever it was, and they restored it. It almost seemed like they're just deleting channels to see who says something and who doesn't. Because it otherwise doesn't make any sense. Like, if there was a reason to delete the channel, then say, we're sorry, your channel was terminated for a violation of our guidelines, and we didn't feel like striking you, so bye-bye, right?
Yeah.
Like, you don't have to restore the channel, but to restore the channel is a strange response. So it almost just seems like, well, let's just delete some of these channels and see if the user is still paying attention or whatever.
Right.
You know? Let's continue here with your calls and thoughts. Neil is on the line in Arizona. Go ahead, Neil.
Hi, guys. How are you doing tonight?
What's on your mind, Neil?
You've got an obvious lack of callers tonight. I don't know what's going on.
It happens.
Facebook, during the 2020 election, they took my account and banned me for life and then told me I had so long to download all my information and I was never able to download anything. You know, I had to up my internet speed and I bought an external hard drive because I had like 30,000 pictures and whatever things on Facebook that I wanted to download and save, and I wasn't able to get any of it.
Oh, wow.
And it was just crazy. I mean, Facebook, and they banned me for life all over my political views.
Well, that's another reason to shut down your Facebook account before you get banned, right? Is to disconnect from them. But while you go through the process of the disabling your account, there is a way to download the entirety of your account so you can save all those pictures or whatever. If you don't already have a copy of them, you can get that from Facebook, or at least you could a few years ago. So that is another reason to preemptively do this.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Take you out.
The fact is, Facebook is going to break up with everybody at some point. I would be the one to break up with Facebook first.
Mm-hmm.
That's
right.
Probably a good idea to take that first step on your own.
Neil, I don't know if you have more to share. If you do, hang on. We can bring you back here in hour number three. If that's the case, the number is 603-283-6160. There's potential court cases looming at the Supreme Court that may overturn some serious free speech protections. It does not look good, but it hasn't happened yet. Hour number three is coming up here as well. And we can talk about secession for Texas and others coming up.
If you're like most Americans, you can see things are out of control. Global problems have local consequences, too many of them. And if the next news headline spins us into chaos, you'd better be ready. Grocery store supply chains are only as strong as their weakest link. Don't wait for them to break. Today's the day to secure emergency food for everyone in your family. My Patriot Supply is America's largest preparedness company. Our specially packaged and delicious food stays fresh for up to 25 years in storage. It'll be there when you need it. Go to MyPatriotSupply.com and pick up several emergency food kits. There are a dozen different sizes that average over 2,000 calories per day. As we all know, calories equals energy equals survival. And as you'd expect from a true preparedness company, our food kits are in stock and ship quickly. Those who know what's coming are preparing today. Go to MyPatriotSupply.com. MyPatriotSupply.com.
Anytime, any place, anywhere. Radio remains the most intimate of all forms of media. At home, at work, in the car, on smartphones. Over 90% of consumers still listen to radio every week. That makes choosing radio as a place to advertise your business one of the best decisions you can make. Email advertise at gcnlive.com and partner up with an experienced GCN representative. Advertise at gcnlive.com. Easy, affordable, effective.
You've seen crazy diets to lose weight? At GCN Team, our healthy body weight loss system simply neutralizes the body, bringing down cravings. It has been proven that nutritional deficiencies drive appetite for carbs, sugars, and fats. Lose weight the easy way. Find us at GCNteam.com or call 877-878-4203. Fighting cravings is a fool's game. Give the body what it needs to be satisfied. Again, 877-878-4203. That's 877-878-4203.